Welcome to Nintendo Main, episode 11. We're going to do something a little different here. We're going to do a retrospective on the Mario RPG series. That's the Super Nintendo ones and the spiritual successors that came from that in the form of Paper Mario and the Mario Luigi games in anticipation for the Paper Jam release, which is this Friday. And we are your hosts, as always. It's me, Trey Johnson, and...
Hey, what's up? It's Jeremy McCaskey.
How's it going? How are things since last week? Are you still playing the same things as before?
I am.
Still plugging away in Xenoblade?
I did download Metroid, and I've been playing through that.
Oh, yeah.
Zero Mission, I've got to... What did I just get? I don't remember. Oh, I can hang on ledges.
Oh, sure. Yeah,
I think
oh, okay. I was gonna say I don't think it's that long of a game. I think it's more like a 10-hour game, about. But it's cool. I mean, it's I know it's considered like the better one of the Game Boy Advance games. Like, a lot of people like it more than Fusion because it has less hand holding. You know, kind of has just the right amount of showing you some stuff but letting you figure it out too. You know.
Well, if it ramps up in difficulty, that'd be cool because it's been really easy so far.
Yeah, it gets harder.
Okay, because so far I would say I like Fusion better than I like this. I think this looks cooler. It looks more like a Super Nintendo game.
Yeah, the pixel art on it is really good. Like, it looks really nice.
A lot more like Super Metroid, yeah. I do like that, for sure. It's got a more simplified approach, which kind of makes it more of like a pure video game.
Yeah. Fun. And it also has a... It still has the... I mean, it still has the original Metroid game on it also. Which is cool. So you got like two games for the price of one, I guess.
That's what I hear.
Like,
but
after
you have to beat
to
get that, right?
Yeah, when you beat the regular game, you get it. But at least you'd have access to Metroid, and not have to pay like $5 for the whatever, you know, if you had, you know, the Virtual Console.
Now, what game was it? Was that Metroid Prime that had the original Metroid, but you had to connect Fusion to the GameCube game to unlock?
Yeah.
Original Metroid.
Yeah, Metroid Prime had original Metroid on it also, where you connect, and all you have to do, like, you don't even have to beat anything, you just connect Fusion to the GameCube with the Game Boy Advance cord, you know.
There was Nintendo thinking ahead, like, way ahead of their time.
You also got, you also were able to, use the, to change Samus, to have Samus wear the suit from Fusion in Prime. Like, that was also part of it. Which is pretty cool, I guess, you know, if you wanted to switch it up. I mean, Fusion was pretty hard. I remember when I got both those games at the same time, I thought that Fusion was, like, way harder than Prime. And then when I got farther into Prime, I thought that Prime was harder than Fusion, but... Just because Prime would like refill your life every time you saved, and I thought that was really helpful. And Fusion didn't do that.
You would feel like you were at a dead end. I know you weren't actually at a dead end, but it just basically made you like scan everywhere. Literally scan, but you gotta go everywhere around the map and use your bombs, crouch and run, and just to advance through the story, sometimes you just have to like find that little tiny bomb hole you missed before.
Oh, sure.
I remember that being a little frustrating, and I haven't noticed anything like that in Zero Mission. It moves along at a pretty nice pace so far.
Yeah. So we'll just cover a little news before we get into the meat. I heard that Zach and Wiki is coming out tomorrow for Virtual Console. If anybody has not played that game or doesn't have it, then you should 100% get it. Like, I 100%. Recommend that game. This is a really cool, point and click type game, you know, with some pretty hard puzzles in it, and also, like, you know, motion based stuff as well. Did you play? I mean, you played that, right? Does Zach and Wiki, or did you make it through?
I actually borrowed that game from you.
Oh yeah, I probably did. I like that game a lot.
I played pretty far into it. I definitely did not beat it.
Yeah, I beat that one. It gets really hard. Like, there's some pretty tough stuff in there.
And it's a lot of trial and error to
figure
out what's kind of reminded me a little bit of Treasure Island Dizzy. Did you ever play that?
No.
On the original NES?
No.
It's Dizzy. It was a game developed by... I can't remember now. I wish I could remember off the top of my head. But they came out with cartridges that had four game in one on the NES. It would have, like, you know, four different games by them all on one cartridge.
So oh, sure.
Kind of value. They had a character, Dizzy, and it was all... It was kind of point-and-click, but, you know, with the limits of the NES, you really just kind of walked somewhere.
And oh, sure.
In the environment.
Yeah.
But it was very much the same sort of thing where, like, you had to do it in the right order or it was instant death, and you had to start over again.
Yeah. If I remember correctly on that one, like, you... Like, something happens, like, if you die a certain amount of times, like, your score lowers or you have to pay money to bring yourself back together. I remember there was some sort of something about it where you wanted to try to go through it without dying. But yeah,
it's a very hard game.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't mind like giving it a go again, but I still have my copy of it also, so I don't know if I would get the Virtual Console version, but I don't know.
Also, big release tomorrow on the 3DS Virtual Console. Super Mario Advance 4, Super Mario Brothers 3.
Oh, really?
So if you'd like to download Mario 3 again,
you can. I mean, is this seriously? The Game Boy...
This one is also a value pack, 2-in-1. You get the original Mario Brothers.
Yeah, that came with, like, everything on all of those.
Including one of the games we'll talk about today, included the original Mario Brothers because on the Game Boy Advance... Every Mario game had to have the original Mario on it.
Did Superstar Saga have that on there too?
It did?
I didn't remember. I haven't played it. It's been so long since I played it that I... Because I remember it was on... it's on Yoshi's Island, right? On the Super Mario Advance, Yoshi's Island.
Every goddamn Mario game.
Yeah, those games were...
On the Game Boy Advance. They really pushed that game because it truly gave multiplayer functionality to every Mario game, even that was the only one.
Yeah, so I guess if you had any version of that, you had that and you could play. I mean, could you like cross do it with different like?
I don't know, man. The game sucks so much that I never really experimented with it.
I mean, I guess that would be that would make sense if that was what they're trying to do. Where like, you know, if one person buys Yoshi's Island, the other one buys like Super Mario Advance 2, then you guys can still play Mario 1 on there. You know. I don't know.
Super Mario World.
Yeah, those games got really confusing. Like the way the numbering was going because it was completely because the first one was Mario 2 and the second one was Mario 4. So, I don't know.
Super Mario Advance 4, Super Mario Brothers 3. That comes out tomorrow. So you get Super Mario Brothers 4.
Does it really? They both come out?
Was originally for the Game Boy Advance. On the Wii U, which is not the Wii, it's the Wii U.
Yeah, that's the sweet deal.
It's mouthful words from Nintendo, but it's good content.
I saw some sort of like a survey thing, I guess, that was saying something about like some specs of the NX, which looked like similar stuff to the PS4, like some sort of streaming thing. Also said something about like a subscription service involving like 150 playable games that may change over time. I don't know. That sounded cool if that's really what it is. But I saw that there were some things that are coming out, I guess, that people think might be real. I don't know. I'm kind of getting tired of speculating about it. I wish just somebody would say something. So I think we're due for a direct or something, you know, this year being like, hey, this is what's going to happen. But
I'm pretty confident we're going to hear something about it at E3, even if it's just them saying we're going to have a big announcement this fall about the NX.
I think
we'll get confirmation from them directly.
Yeah.
Because that's really not what it's going to be called. It's never what the project name is.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. I mean, even with all the talk on this one, I'm surprised they don't just call it that.
It's going to be called, like, Weutiful or something.
Yeah, I hope not. No, I think they said they're going to try to get away from the Wii title. I'm still waiting for them to make the Game Sphere. Like, I thought that was what the Wii was going to be when it was just called Revolution. thought it was just going to be a big ball that you just hold, and it, like, gives you feelings. It's like, kind of like that drug ball from Sleeper, if you've seen the Woody Allen movie Sleeper. There's, like, these big big silver drug balls that they, like, touch, and it gets you high. That's what I always thought Revolution would be. It would just be a big ball. It's a big silver ball that you touch, and it makes you feel like you're playing a game, you know?
It wasn't quite that, but, I mean, it did... Shake the remote around a lot, like, I don't know. You were having to physically interact with it in a different kind of a way to...
Yeah. Well, this is when nobody had said anything about it, and it was just, like, codename Revolution, you know, like, the same as this is, you know, so...
Maybe that's right.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Yeah, maybe it'll
be... What's the Revolution going to be? Motion controls. I think it ended up being less about motion controls and more about integrating all the technology into the controllers for the device.
Sure.
Because now, you know, all that stuff's in every game console controller that's released.
Yeah, the motion, whatever. But, yeah, I don't know, we'll see. But stuff that actual news that we know about is, you know, like I said before, Mario & Luigi Paper Jam. The 10th, I guess you could count it, the 10th version of those, you know, RPG games comes out this Friday, so.
That's just crazy to me. Yeah. I knew about all the games. I've played all of them in some capacity or another, even just for a second. But I just never really put them all down on a piece of paper and looked at them. And that's what I did.
In games. Yeah, there's a lot of them. Well, there was...
It's also been 20 years since the first one was released. So.
Yeah, 20 years since Super Mario RPG. Which we're due for. I'm still waiting on that virtual console release. See if that's been released in every other country but here. But I'm sure it'll come around eventually. I just don't know when.
I mean, to be fair, you can get it on the Wii U already. You just have to use the Wii mode.
You have to go to Wii mode, but I don't know. The Wii mode on mine is like kind of hit or miss. Like it doesn't work all the time, so it's kind of a pain. So I try to just do stuff for the Wii U. But anyway, let's get into it. So Super Mario RPG: Legend of the Seven Stars released May 13th, 1996. I think we talked about that last week a little bit because I got it for my birthday, for my 16th birthday, because that was like 6 days before my birthday that it came out. And I told you that I was it was either between that or Chrono Trigger, and I ended up getting that one because I don't know. Because it won, like, some award on Nintendo Power for, like, the, you know, the best RPG of the year or whatever. And I ended up enjoying it, but it was... I wanted it to be longer, like Chrono Trigger, so I was a little upset that it wasn't as long. But it was still a good departure for the Mario series.
I think I do remember telling you about, you know, hearing news about that game, because I would have been in junior high at the time. The video game magazines like EGM and Nintendo Power were talking about it, and I didn't believe it when someone told me there was going to be a Super Mario RPG made by Square and Nintendo. It just sounded like they were messing around with me, like,
sure,
you know, trying to pull. Right? So once I started seeing news about it, I definitely was hyped up about that game. I was really excited about it. The more I found out about it, because I was like, how are they going to make this work? Like, I couldn't. I don't know. I didn't.
Couldn't fathom.
I think you made a good choice picking that game. I think Chrono Trigger is... I probably like Chrono Trigger more when it comes down to it, as far as like my favorite games of all time. But I think you picked a good, quirky... Not only like was that a great game, just in general, like an RPG to have fun with and everything, but 4 months later, Super Mario 64 was coming out.
Yeah.
How would you get to that universe?
It was right on the cusp of, it was on the cusp of the 64. Like, I didn't realize that those came out in the same year, but, yeah, they did. I mean, it was, like, May to September is what, like, what was that, like, 4 months? 3 months? About?
Four months.
Yeah, so, 4 months apart. Basically the summer, and then the winter would be the 64. I read that this was like Square's and Nintendo's attempt, I guess, to make RPGs more popular in America. Because I guess they weren't selling that well. I thought Final Fantasy was pretty huge, but I guess it didn't get huge until, like, 7, maybe. I thought it was somewhat huge, like, in the 2 and 3 times, 4 and 6.
7 was a game that... I think that it was popular already, but I think 7 is when it kind of exploded, because 3 in the U.S., 6 as it's known, total Final Fantasy, had actually done really well, and people were super excited about the next one. And, you know, and it went along with, you know, people being really excited about the PlayStation.
Sure.
And so, with those two things combined, like, that just made Final Fantasy VII, like, the game. It was the game to have that was coming out on the horizon, and people just got so excited about it.
Yeah.
So with that being told, I'm sure, I mean, I haven't looked up actual numbers, but it had to set records for game sales at the time in some regard, even if it was just RPG game sales.
I think it became more popular then, though, than it was before, like RPG, like Final Fantasy. Like, I think that their series was more popular in the PS1 era than the Super Nintendo era, I think. You know, because not a whole lot of people, I guess, played as much. Because that's what from what I read, like, they were like, they were like, well, let's do an RPG and put Mario on it, so it'll be, like, more approachable and people will play it, you know, and understand it more, I guess. It seemed like what they were trying to do with it, you know.
They did a good job with it.
Yeah, no, they did a great job. I thought it was interesting because, you know, you start off in Bowser's castle, like Bowser's doing his normal stealing of the princess, and then the sword comes down, and then you get, you know, it was a different, I liked it because it was a different villain than the regular Bowser, you know, and I liked it.
It brought Mario and Bowser together on one side because...
Yeah, it brought...
Castle back.
It brought Bowser, Mario, and Peach together, so you could finally play with Peach. And also the, you know, Mallow and Geno as well. The fluffy cloud dude who thinks he's like a frog or a tadpole or whatever. And the star spirit that became the doll, which ended up becoming a Mii costume on the Smash Brothers.
Oh, right, the Geno.
Yeah, because a lot of people want... apparently people voted for him.
Mallow's kind of Kirby-like in his appearance.
Yeah.
Mallow wasn't as huge, but he's very much a marshmallow creature.
Well, I remember his, like, magic moves. Like, his cloud, like, wasn't attached to his pants, right? Because I remember he would do a move where his cloud would, like, come out and his pants and feet would, like, stay there.
Yeah, I kind of...
Whenever he did, like, his magic moves.
Like, where he was a cloud on top of the biological...
Yeah, have you heard that rumor that that supposedly, like, Miyamoto, like, didn't like the way that Donkey Kong Country looked, and that Yoshi's Island was originally supposed to look like that, and he went for, like, the hand drawn version for it instead. I've heard rumors about that. I don't know if it's actually true, but it's weird because, you know, that one, you know, they did such a different style for Yoshi's Island, but then when, like, Super Mario RPG came around, it was, like, very much the same, like, fully rendered style of Donkey Kong Country. I thought, you know, it looked a lot like that, with, like, sort of the 3D looking sprites that weren't actually 3D, you know.
That was kind of like that, but when I think about it more, and I actually just kind of came to this revelation in it because I was looking at the game a little bit, it reminds me of, like, you know, one of those really complicated board games that have, like, the little figures and stuff.
Oh, sure.
Kind of like the way it's set in that isometric way, and there's very, like, they have to create the illusion of depth with the terrain, and so there's just a lot of, like, little things, like little rocks and little trees and stuff that are there just to kind of, like, help with the perspective to, like, give you an idea of where you need to go. And
sure.
So it just kind of looks like everything's laid out on a table, like a toy set even. I mean, and I think even once you get to meet Geno, and he is, in fact, a toy.
Yeah.
You know, he inhabits the body of a toy. That's kind of how I feel about Mario RPG. I kind of feel like it's happening in, like, a toy set. So instead of being, like, paper Mario, where it's paper,
yeah,
it's like toy a bit.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
So I think, like, everything on Donkey Kong was more, like, not only was everything pre-rendered, but then it had, like, several frames of animation, at least, for the time, for even when sprites were stationary.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what gave it.
I guess it's a little smoother. I just, when I was, when the game came out, like, and I saw it, it just made me think of, like, the Donkey Kong Country graphics, and I thought it was similar, you know, kind of where they were trying to go with the sort of a 3D look. I understand, like, the toy box, the way it looks like the toy box, but, yeah. I mean, I just, at the time when I was, like, 16, I was like, oh, this kind of looks like, this sort of looks like the style of Donkey Kong a little bit. To me, I did, like, in the cutscenes, like, the opening, where it shows, like, Peach, like, on the hill and all that, like, that kind of reminded me of, like, the first of, like, Donkey Kong Country 1's graphics, you know, and maybe some of 2, but...
Cranky's cranking the record player and then the boombox falls on him. I see what you mean.
Yeah, when I was, like, 16, it reminded me of that style. Just because of
time. It reminded me of it too, actually.
Yeah. So I was saying, when it came out, I was like, oh, that's kind of like that. But I understand that it looks different now. But, I don't know. I found it, like, because it has, like, the isometric view, I found it kind of harder to jump on the enemies, you know? The way it moved. Like, it's because I was used to everything being the 2D, and I found it kind of harder to squash the Goombas and whatnot.
You have to learn to use the shadow.
Yeah.
Mario shadow to kind of guide you.
It started the whole difficulty of jumping on Goombas in 3D, right? Pretty much. Because the
Did
beginning
you ever
of that.
Play Sonic 3D Blast?
Yeah, I think it's on one of my... Like, I have a couple Sonic Collection CDs. Or the Sonic Collection stuff for GameCube. I think it's on one of those.
That's a game that reminded me of Mario RPG, but only in style. Like, not gameplay, but it's really hard to play when they try to take that style, that isometric style.
There's a Sonic RPG also on DS, I think, that I never played, but they said it wasn't as interesting as the Mario RPG stuff. But, probably because he doesn't have much that he can do other than just run fast and jump on people, you know.
Right, did he just, like, upgrade his spin ability?
I guess. I don't know, I didn't play it. I mean, it wasn't rated very well, so I didn't really check it out.
Does Tails just get more Tails?
Maybe.
I hope so.
Yeah, totally.
He wouldn't have to change his name. He's still Tails plural.
Yeah. I know we touched on it before, probably in another episode, about the differences in the Virtual Console one, because you said you played it on a CRTV, right? The Wii version?
I did.
From what I read, they used...
From what I read,
like, some of the magic spells are, like, less flashy, I guess because of fear of seizures and all that. I guess after they got into the trouble with the Pokemon, and all that, you know? Once, so apparently...
Source hardware or on the re-release?
The re-release. They changed some of the colors on the re-release because it was too flashy in the other one. Like the flame wall magic spell. Instead of being, like, red, orange, and yellow, as how it was in the original one, it's just, like, red now. It's just, like, a darker red. It doesn't have as many colors. Whereas where, like, the static-y magic spell has changed also. Like, just to, like, a darker blue. Because of fear of seizures. Which I thought was funny.
Well,
because you remember that whole thing with, like, you know, people having seizures from watching the Pokemon anime in Japan.
Right, one episode.
And that kind of became a thing after that, where there was, like, warnings at the beginning of every game. I mean, well, that was later, like, because the Wii had it on everything. And some of the Game Boy Advance ones, I think, did too, and then later with the DS had warnings. So some other things I wanted to note. It was not, you know, I mean, you know about Culex. I think we talked about Culex, the appearance of the Final Fantasy. Supposedly he's supposed to be, looks like a Final Fantasy boss, you know. Culex and his...
He looks like he's straight up from Mystic Quest, now that I know more.
Oh, yeah. Mystic Quest, man. That was a game there.
I'll stand beside that game. I know it's kind of a shitty game. It's pretty shitty.
Yeah, I played it, but it's like no... Yeah,
it was the first RPG I ever beat, so there you go. That's why one reason why it's important to me.
It's pretty easy.
It was really accessible and easy. it was super easy. I don't know. I think it's actually kind of a fun game.
Yeah. I just remember I played through it because it had the Final Fantasy name on it, like, after I'd played, like, 4 and 6, and I was not really, I wasn't impressed by it. I was like, eh, that was kind of a waste. But I remember the beginning of it being really weird, where it was just, like, battle after battle after battle, like, in the very first part. Do you remember that? Yeah. And it was...
I'll say, that game was that...
It felt like Final Fantasy Jr., you know?
Right, but I had never played... I'd only played the original Final Fantasy on NES, and I beat Garland. Like, that's as far as I ever got as a kid. Like, I actually beat him, but then I, like, kept dying right after that, so I kind of gave up. But after playing all the way through Mystic Quest, without using any kind of a guide or anything, I felt really good. That's when I, like, decided to play through Final Fantasy III. So, you know, it was kind of late to the game, but... I borrowed Final Fantasy III from my friend, and it was awesome.
Yeah.
What kind of got me into RPGs was that game, Mystic Quest. So
sure.
It holds a special place in my heart, and I think that's really awesome that one of the writers for that game was the director of Super Mario RPG.
Yeah. Well, what the way that I just to finish off the subject of Mystic Quest, the way I came into contact with Final Fantasy Mystic Quest was basically when the 64 came out, like my friend Curtis in high school decided that he was going to sell all of his Super Nintendo games for like $5 each, you know, because he didn't need them anymore because he bought a 64. So I basically bought all of his games from him, one of them being Mystic Quest. And I had already played through Final Fantasy III by then. So I just kind of bought it because it had Final Fantasy in the name, and I played it through it, and I was like, "Wow, this seems like a Final Fantasy Junior." But if you played it before the others, I understand how you would like it more because you wouldn't know. I mean, it seems like very much like a beginner game, like it's much more simplified than the other ones. But enough about Final Fantasy.
Enough about Final Fantasy.
Yeah,
but there's a link here. There's a reason why we're talking about it.
Because of Culex.
Because of QLX and because of the director of the game working for Square and it being Squaresoft. But I did just...
But then he...
See if that health warning is at the beginning, and it is.
Yeah, oh yeah. Is at the beginning of what?
Final Fantasy VI Advance.
Oh, yeah. No, that was... They were putting him on that. I think there's a health warning at the beginning of Superstar Saga also. On the Mario Luigi Superstar Saga. I was going to say, this is one of the few games to use the... they had a special chip for the graphics. You knew that, right? The SA1 chip?
I think I read something about that, but it just kind of pushed the Super Nintendo, right?
Yeah, it was a special new Super Nintendo chip. It was like this and seven other games use it. I don't know if it's the same... It's not the same as the Super FX chip, right, from Star Fox?
Is it a chip that's in the cartridge or that's already on board the
hardware? I think it's in the cartridge.
Okay, so it's kind of like the FX, but a different thing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's there was like seven SNES games that used the SA1 chip. It was supposed to, like, make everything... It's like an enhancement chip. It's supposed to make everything work faster, I guess. Yeah, Super Accelerator 1 chip is what it's called.
It's a really good-looking game. I think it holds up pretty well.
Yeah, I'd like to play it again. A couple things I wanted to note for sure is one of my favorite characters from the game, which I always wished that he would have been utilized more than just that game, was Boshi, the bad Yoshi. I love that guy. You know?
Yeah, he was kind of like the...
Why can't he hang out with, like, Waluigi and Wario? Why can't he be, like, part of their posse?
Street gang leader, yeah. Yeah, why isn't he hanging out with... You're correct. Why is he not hanging out with...
You always wondered why he only existed in that game, because I thought he was a cool character. He was, like, blue, and he had the sunglasses. And I remember he cheated in the cookie race that they were doing. Another...
Do you think Peach is ever going to get a bad version of her?
No, I wanted, like, on the subject of that, I wanted there to be similar to Boshi, where there's, like, a beach. she'd be, the evil Peach would be Beach, like the Boshi, you know? It'd be funny, because it kind of sounds like bitch, but it's not.
I know. They would not be able to do that.
You don't think they do Beach?
I think they do something like Zeech.
I think it'd be hilarious.
I think it'd be Zeech with an X.
Yeah, I don't know.
Like, well,
A P, like upside down, is like a B, right? Beach. I'm telling you, Nintendo, if you listen to this and don't want to shut us down, you know, beach.
What about the number 6, E-A-C-H? It's kind of like in between.
Oh, yeah, I don't know. Maybe.
It's not as, it doesn't look so much like bitch.
Sure.
But yeah, I did like Boshi. Boshi was cool. The whole little Yoshi's Island side quest was completely kind of optional. I think you can play through the whole game.
Without going to the Oster Isle?
Yeah, I don't think it's critical to moving the story along.
It's
just kind of a side quest.
I referenced Super Mario RPG in my own way when I played through the Paper Mario Thousand Year Door by naming the Yoshi character Yoster from the Yoster Isle. I thought that was pretty cool.
Named him Yoster too.
Oh, you did? Yeah.
I did. Yep, that's kind of funny that we did that.
So we kept the Yoster, the little baby dude.
I still call him Yoster. Yoshi's always Yoster to me.
Yeah. The directors for that was Chihiro Fujioka and Yoshihiko Maekawa, which I guess those guys went on to do a lot of the Mario and Luigi games after this one. So a lot of the same team stayed from this to form Alpha Dream, which I didn't really know. So all the people that were like, you know, we want more RPG, it's like, well, you got more Mario RPG in 4 other games. Called Mario and Luigi with the same developing team, you know, for the most part, which I didn't know that a lot of them had left Square to work directly with Nintendo on the Alpha Dream, which is pretty cool. And I know Yoko Shimomura, she did the sound, she did the music for everything, for all of those games, all of the Mario and Luigi games.
I think it's all pretty wacky. They're all pretty wacky games, but I think the Mario and Luigi games kind of take the, I guess, the text, you know, the story part, that they go wacky in that way, and then they go wacky just with everything. But yeah, the Paper Mario games get wacky in just that you turn into folded up things that can do different things.
Sure.
Since you're made out of paper.
Yeah. I mean,
it introduces those mechanics that are kind of cool, but man, the Mario and Luigi series, you're just straight up smashing each other and shaping each other into different forms.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Like you're made out of Play-Doh.
Yeah. I noticed that almost that the Super Mario RPG and like almost all of the Paper Marios all have like an 8-bit moment where Mario turns into his 8-bit form from the original game. I'm sure you remember there's the curtain in Booster's Tower. And like you can only do it one time where you like walk behind the curtain and then all of a sudden you turn into 8-bit Mario. You found that secret, right? I'm sure. An RPG.
It did. But let's talk about Booster for a second.
Yeah.
Did he look like Wario?
Yeah, he did look like Wario. I always felt that. I thought he looked a lot like... He looked a lot like the Wario from Super Mario Land 2, like the original Wario from the Game Boy, from the Game Boy one. So I always wondered about that. I'm like, why didn't he just call it Wario?
Yeah, just everything about him was very Wario-like. I mean, even, like, the fact that he was really rich and just greedy. I didn't really understand what was going on beyond, like, that he just wanted to have things.
Sure.
He's definitely Wario.
Yeah. No, I felt that way, too. Like, I definitely thought he was Wario. What about Valentina? Do you remember her?
I do. Valentina was the, told everyone that, her Dodo guy that followed her around was, his name was Dodo, right?
Yeah. The thing I thought was funny about Valentina was when you fought her, like every time you hit her, her boob shook. I remember I thought that was a weird addition. Like her and the cloud spirit on Thousand Year Door were both kind of like, I don't know. I was like, oh, this is kind of a little sexy on here, you know.
I mean, check out the cloud spirit. I don't remember.
You remember? You remember the cloud spirit with the big boobs from Thousand Year Door?
I don't.
She's like a big purple. She's like a big purple lady.
Is she your like a playable character?
Yeah, she's one of your people. She's part of your team.
Oh yeah, I know you're talking about Madam something or another.
Yeah, aside from the 8-bit appearance, there's also a couple, you know, Link and Samus were in the game. I'm sure you found them. Yeah. They showed up at some of the hotels and that like slept in the beds beds next to you.
It's the hotel where you meet Geno. What's the name of that town? The Rosewood.
It was Link is in Rose Tower, the Rose Tower Inn, and Samus is in the Toadstool Castle Inn. There's also, I guess there's also like some F-Zero cars and there's an R-Wing in one part also. So they did some references to other stuff.
Another cool thing that was in this game was the, if you bought the Super Game Boy off of the, or whatever it's called, the Toad Boy, is that what it's called? You bought the game console off the kid.
The Beatlemania?
Yeah, and you gotta play Beatlemania, and that game's pretty fun.
Yeah, I remember Beatlemania. It was like a shooter with the, but it had the background, the Mario background behind it. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it looked like Super Mario World behind it, and basically a bunch of shells were bouncing around, or beetles, whatever they were. Yeah, they were shells, and you were a beetle, and they would hit the bottom of the ground and bounce around, kind of like shells, like from an aerial view of how the shells would bounce in.
Sure.
You shoot them, but then it creates chain reactions, so the idea is to kind of like let as many shells get on the screen as possible and avoid them, and then fire a bullet and try to get as high of a score before you keep getting hit and killed.
Yeah, I remember playing that game like well after I beat the game. Like I would still come back and play Beatlemania. So it was a nice little addition on there to the game.
I guess that was that game's version of the original Super Mario Brothers, which is on
yeah.
Star Saga.
Yeah, they should include that in there.
Bring back Beatlemania hashtag.
Yeah.
You put the hashtag at the end, I think.
I don't know if I don't know. Chihiro Fujioka. He's in a band called Earthbound Papas with Nobuo Uematsu, which I thought was pretty awesome. And they play Final Fantasy music. So one of the director. He's like a drummer. But yeah, he's in a rock band. I guess Nobuo's he had another band called the Black Mages also before that, which I thought was pretty cool.
The Black Mages.
Yeah, the Black Mages. I'm just gonna go down the line as in like how like what like, when they came out. 5 years after 5 years after Super Mario RPG was Paper Mario on 64. When I got my 64, I was like huge into the Super Nintendo RPG stuff. And unfortunately 64 was like mostly devoid of RPG games. So this was like it was like at the very end of the life cycle of the system, but it was like the game I was waiting for like pretty much through the whole thing, you know. So I was very excited for it when it came out.
What's kind of cool about this game is I actually like knew you and was hanging out with you when this game came out.
Yeah, we had met each other already at that time because we met in like I don't know, like 99 probably. 99 or 2000. Yeah, so we actually knew each other when that came out, so it was pretty rad. I remember my mom got me a credit card. And the first purchase I made with it was Paper Mario, which I did actually pay that one off. I didn't pay much off of that credit card at first, but yeah, I remember that was the first thing I bought. But yeah, it was highly anticipated for me. It's the sequel to Super Mario RPG, which I guess it was originally going to be called Super Mario RPG 2, but there was some sort of complications with the title. And Squaresoft, so they couldn't do that, I guess, so they changed the name. I don't know. But it departed from the way that the Mario RPG was with the you don't have like multiple, I mean Mario has party members, but they don't have health, you know, they're just able to attack basically in between. So I mean I'll just go down the list of characters. I just wrote up some of them, you know. Oh, and the 8 there's Goombario, who basically he gives Mario info on stuff. You got Cooper, which is one of the turtle guys that you can kick his shell and he'll get stuff for you. The Paracarry is basically a paratrooper that that carries you, you know, can carry you from one spot to another. Bombette blows up stuff in the walls. Lady Bo is the ghost that, like, makes Mario invisible. Watt was the electricity thing that eliminated dark places, much like Flash from Pokemon. There's a fish called Sushi, which I thought was hilarious. The basic, he just basically uses a boat. He just uses it to cross the water. And Lackluster, Lackluster, which you can ride in his cloud to it's basically Lackitu, but Lackluster. You can ride in his cloud to get from one place to another. And I remember also the stars having their own moves as well, like when you collected those, which is like the...
Yeah, they are kind of like summons.
I think it's like this one. I think, like, the first three games, like, all have you collecting 7 stars. Like, because, like, Super Mario RPG, Paper Mario, and Mario & Luigi, I think all have 7 stars in them. Which is interesting, that they kept going with the 7 star collection.
Hey, what works, works, you know.
Yeah. So...
So they
definitely did like kind of try to make it a spiritual successor, like even including this, you know, the 7 stars. But yeah, I remember that. You know, that one was fun. I remember there was like a reference to the turtles in there. Do you remember that the Koopas that had the masks where you fought like 4 of them and they had like the stack that you had to knock over? Do you remember remember those guys? They're pretty cool.
Hey, we didn't even mention the. Power Rangers being in Super Mario RPG.
Oh yeah, were they? Oh yeah, they were. Where there was a reference to that. I forgot about that.
Like, Rangers.
All I remembered was the Turtles guys from Paper Mario.
Yep, but before that there had been the Axum Rangers, which were like the Power Rangers, and they became like the giant axe or whatever.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I forgot about that.
But anyway, back to the point at hand, yeah, I do remember the turtles, and they, like, stacked up together, and it became one giant column of turtles as an attack.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This, I mean, we didn't go over the plot that much on the last one. I mean, we mentioned that the sword, like, fell in Bowser's castle, and you had to fight the sword and whatnot. But this one's basically, you know, back to Bowser being the main character. Remember, he stole the entire castle. And I remember there were all these, like, weird interludes where you would walk around, where you would, like, sneak around as Peach and, like, read different... you would, like, read Bowser's diary and, like, yeah. you'd go through the fireplace and, like, try to figure out. And, like, you would send this star thing to go talk to Mario for you and all that. I remember that part. That part was interesting, you know, because I never really played as Peach much.
There was actually a scene where you had to bake a cake.
Oh yeah, there was a scene about that. I remember that.
You had to walk around the kitchen, grab the ingredients, and then add them in the right order, whisk them, I think. Pour that in the pan, put it in the oven.
Yeah.
Then you had to it was pretty complex because I think you had to pull it out in a minute, but it didn't actually give you a timer. You just had to wait, or maybe it was 30 seconds, and then you pull it out. Hope you didn't burn it.
Yeah, no, I remember there was some sort of time thing on that. Which I think I ended up burning it, but I don't remember. This one is also this one is available on Virtual Console on Wii U, which is great. There's like 3 of these out of the 9 of them that I think are available to get. I noticed that Bill Trennan, who's like a big guy on Nintendo of America, he's like his name is on the localization for a lot of these for like the first like 5. Like he did localization for this one.
Really?
Yeah.
Just like kind of played through it and pointed out maybe translation errors.
Well, Bill Trennan started as a translator for Miyamoto, I think. Like when he first started working for Nintendo. So he did a lot of that stuff before he became, you know, higher up. Which is pretty cool. Because I guess he knew Japanese fairly well. I guess there was some stuff altered in this one as well, like in the Virtual Console release. Same sort of thing, just to make it a little bit less flashy and less seizure-y. And I think it's a little darker also on the Wii U one. I haven't played it, but, you know, I'd like to.
I've only played it on the Wii Virtual Console version. once again on a CRT.
Yeah. Well, you can get it. I mean, you can get it on the Wii U for like $2 now because it's discounted if you have it. If you had it on the,
yeah,
if you did the transfer, if you did the system transfer, you get the discount where you pay like $1 for the NES ones. For like, I think it's like $1.50 for Super Nintendo and $2 for 64 to upgrade.
But I did actually play this game the first time in our college dorm.
Oh sure.
In your dorm room, I do remember playing it. I don't think I ever beat it originally, but a couple years later I came back to it. I think it was probably in 2004, 2005. I've actually played all the way through it.
Oh yeah, it's a good game. I'd like to return to it again. I played it
3 or 4 times now. It's pretty fun.
A couple years ago, I played it like more recently. Like I played it on the 64, maybe like about 3 or 4 years ago. I played through most of it again. I don't think I made it all the way through, but. There's an 8-bit transformation in this one also. It's in there's a vase in Boo's Mansion that you can jump into that'll turn you into the original Mario. This is the one to keep that theme going. No real references to the other franchises, unfortunately, though. Like no like Samus or Link in this one. The chief director Ryota Kamade, I thought it was interesting that he had like. He worked on Wario Woods before this. This was like his other game that he did before he did Paper Mario. And his name is on a lot of the later Paper Mario stuff too. Like he was the main guy for Thousand Year Door and Super Paper Mario. So he went on to do like the next two of them. And one thing I found interesting was the credits sequence is like very similar to the credits sequence from RPG. Because they have the same parade, and like Luigi's still like kind of walking the same way and leading the parade with the baton like he does in the Super Nintendo one, which I thought was cool. So they basically redid that one through both of those.
That was really about the only reference they directly made to the original Super Mario RPG.
Was the parade?
Yeah.
Oh, and the 7 stars.
Right,
and then they save 7 stars. I think there might be like a couple other stuff in there too, but that was what I noticed was the. That was because I was looking at for ways for where Luigi was in there, because what was it in the RPG one when you go to the wish, what is it, Star Hill, you find the wish from Luigi where he wants to be a great plumber like his brother Mario. You remember that, right? Did you find that?
Right, that was really hard.
Yeah. This one also released the same year as GameCube, like a couple months before the GameCube came out. It's like the end of the 64 life cycle, much like the Super Mario RPG was the end of the Super Nintendo life cycle. So it's kind of crazy how that works for these. I guess since they take a long time to develop, they would come out more towards the end of it than the beginning, you know. Is there anything else you'd like to mention on the Paper Mario side?
I do remember like one of my favorite parts. I'll just say like a good memory of it. Something that at the time I thought was really hard. But you fight the giant Koopa, which he's like everyone's saying he's invincible. The tyrant Koopa. What's his name?
Tubba Bubba or whatever.
Tubba Bubba. Yeah.
Yeah. Tubba Blubba. Something like that. Yeah. Yeah.
He's the one that. Ghosts, like that's what he eats. Yeah. So all the ghosts are afraid of him. But there's a scene where you have to like run away from him and he's chasing you. You have to run all the way back to the town.
Yeah.
Or you run to the well or something, I can't remember. You climb down into it. But I just remember that being like a super tense moment. They like in a really cutesy art style, they still like convey this like urgency. You had to get away or this thing was going to kill you.
Oh, yeah.
So that was a really intense moment that I don't think anything really, even in the original Mario RPG, I don't think anything ever got that intense.
Sure. Yeah, where you got chased by the giant dude. There's a part, I made note of it. There's a part in the Thousand Year Door when you're on a train, and you remember you find that, like, diary of that ghost? Do you remember that? And he, like, says, he keeps warning you, like, don't read this, don't read this, don't read this. And if you read it, you die. You just die, and it's game over. I remember that, because I was like, I gotta see what's in here, and I read it, and it's just like, done. And it just goes straight to game over. Which I thought that was kind of, that was unexpected. You know, there's a part in Dream Team like that, too, where there's this, like, magical coffee that they tell you not to drink, and if you drink it, you die. And it goes to game over. But, which is kind of mean if you don't, you know, if you don't save before. Like, I was saved before because I figured it was probably going to kill me or something. Something interesting that I wanted to mention for Paper Mario before we move on to the next game is apparently the train that they're on, the K64, that's supposed to be the same train that runs through Katamari Desert, the Mario Kart 64 game, which I thought was cool.
Oh, cool.
So, like, the train that goes through the desert there, that's supposed to be the desert that you see in that race. So it was referencing the referencing Mario Kart after Mario Kart came out, which is pretty interesting.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So they kind of, like, exist in the same, you know, world there. You know, they were doing, like, the cinematic universe before Marvel, you know, where they all... Also the castle that Bowser kidnaps is the exact same layout as it was in Super Mario 64, like, minus the paintings, which is pretty cool. Like, the doors are in the same spot, and the stairs are in the same spot, you know? There's, like, the door in the front, and, like, the ones on the side, and the stairs up to the top. So that, you see that...
I mean, when you're exploring as Peach, or even at the beginning when you're...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, when you see it, it's set up just like the way the castle was in Super Mario 64, which is pretty rad. So that, you could consider that like a reference to that game as well. And what was it? I've just made notes of, like, who did the music, just because, you know, I like music from games. And there was actually an album released for Super Mario RPG of the soundtrack in Japan, which is pretty cool because they get that and we don't normally get that here. But Yuka Sugiyoko did the music for this and Thousand Year Door after that. So it's nice to see, like, who stays on for whatever game. And then they got a different one for Super Paper Mario, but, you know. All right. Ready to move on from... Oh, also, this was a... I want to make note that this was developed by Intelligent Systems, the guys who do the Fire Emblem games, who were originally hired by Nintendo to help port Famicom discs to cartridges for the original NES, which I thought was cool. That was their first job at Nintendo, was helping change the, bring stuff over here, put the games that are already out for discs on cartridges, which is interesting, before they actually made games. And hopefully we'll do a Fire Emblem retrospective too at some point before Fire Emblem Fates. That'll be difficult because I haven't played all of those either, or played all the way through. I haven't played any of them all the way through.
I haven't either, man. That could be tough.
But these first two I've beat for sure, but the other ones not so much. Like, especially the next game, which I think has, like, the fucking worst boss ever in it, the Mario & Luigi Superstar Saga, released November 17th, 2003. I remember getting that.
I'm happy to say I beat that game.
Yeah, and that boss is so ridiculous, because, like, you get swallowed by Bowser, and you have to fight, like, the soul of Cacletta, right? Cacletta's the main villain for that. Cacletta and yeah. Foulful and Bowletta or whatever, they, like, merge into one. But, because, like, a lot of it's based around the dodging with the A and B, and I remember, like, you get to a point where you only have one hit point, and so you have to dodge, like, this series of stuff, or otherwise you die. And that's, like, the second half of the boss. So, like, if you die there, you got to go back and do the whole thing again, and then go back. And it was just. I probably tried it at least 10 or 15 times, and it just eventually, like, it seemed like my game started, like, glitching when I started getting closer to beating it. Like, it would, like, flash, like the game was gonna break. I don't know. But anyway, I never made it through.
Maybe you're squeezing it too hard.
I never made it through that. I never made it out of the final boss of that game. And I guess the bane of my existence or whatever. I have that one for Virtual Console. It was released on Wii U also. I haven't touched it yet, but I bought it when it was on sale for E3 last year. And whenever I get done with Dream Team, I was thinking about jumping back into it and trying to beat that stupid boss again. But everything before that, I really dug. I remember when you got that, like we both got it at the same time, and you said you had beaten it before I did, and I said something like, don't spoil anything. And you said Luigi's really a girl. That's what you said. And then there's a part where he cross dresses in there later. So you spoiled it. But yeah, it was cool. I liked that Luigi was finally in it because all he had done before this was lead parades. He finally became a main character. And I was hoping that the Thunder Hand would stick around for other games, but it didn't really. Like, I thought that was really cool. Like, he had the...
Yeah, Mario's always been Fire Hand, and Luigi was too. I mean,
yeah,
he could be Fire Hand.
But Thunder Hand could have been a power-up in one of the other games. Hand. I mean, it could have been a power-up in, like, you know, New Super Mario Brothers or something. They could have kept it around. The Alpha Dream, I guess the Alpha Dream were the guys who developed this, which had members, basically a lot of the members from the Square one. Like I said, they made a Game Boy Color game called Koto Battle Tengai no Monoboto, and after that they made a game called Tomato Adventure on Game Boy Advance, which sounds pretty great. I don't know if there's like a translation anywhere out there of that, but I wouldn't mind playing it. Yeah,
translated. It seems text heavy.
Yeah, I watched some videos of it, but it was all in Japanese, so I didn't know what's going on. But I watched just kind of try to get an idea of like how the battles worked, because supposedly that was like sort of what this was based on, what Mario and Luigi was development was based on Tomato Adventure. And when there was when it came out in Japan, they had a contest, I guess, and if you won, you won a kilogram of sweet tomatoes. So. I like tomatoes. I'd be down for that. That sounds like a fun contest. I don't know what 1 kilogram. That's like that's got to be like a half a pound or a third a pound something.
A lot of tomatoes.
Yeah, but yeah, you could win those. Had the same music director as Mario RPG, the Yoko Shimomura, who ends up doing the music for all of the Mario and Luigi games, which I thought was interesting. I thought it was a cool idea of Peach like losing her voice and having it turned into explosions. That was something I'd never seen before.
They incorporated the text of the RPG into the physical world of it.
Yeah, and like her text basically looks like they're like little they're like images and stuff that fall down and explode. I think after she talks,
kind of looks like Hubert talking.
Yeah, like that type of thing.
Fossil, hilarious. He's
he has anger and the mustard seed of doom or whatever. I remember some of it, but
he says, "Prepare to be my mustard, the mustard of your doom." I have a screenshot of my Miiverse.
Oh yeah,
when I got to that game, it's like, "Prepare to eat the mustard of your doom." And yeah. It just sounded like something at the time. I don't know if you watched Invader Zim, but it sounded like from that show. Like that kind of Yoden Vasquez kind of something he would write.
Yeah.
That's what it reminded me of. Fawful was very much like he could have been a crossover character from that universe.
Oh, totally, yeah. Mario. They just write some fan fiction that Fawful is Invader Zim in a different universe or something.
Or like Invader Zim's kid or something. I don't know. Tie it in.
This is the first game that had Iwata on it as executive producer. It's right after Iwata had become, higher up. And he's executive producer in every game from this one on. But this is the first one.
Oh, really?
It also has the same directors from RPG. Like the Yoshihiko Makiwa, who was one of the directors for RPG, directed this one as well. So it's like I said, it has a lot of the same people. Bill Trent is a
Deloitte. This one's the one that made Pokemon. Who made Pokemon? The original Pokemon. Was that Intelligent Systems?
No, that's
okay. For some reason, I was making a connection in my head because I know Iwata helped translate
He worked on Pokemon. He worked on Pokemon Gold and Silver. Game Freak. That's the company. Game Freak is the Pokemon company. But yeah. Game Freak did Pokemon. I think Iwata had like somewhat of a hand in designing. I think he might have worked a little bit on Paper Mario, but yeah, he was the executive producer because he had become president around that time, I think, like right before that came out. I just remember it came out like right at Christmas, and I remember playing it like when it was like I was playing like the snow level when it was snowing outside, and it felt like surreal, you know, like that type of thing. Like, you know,
yeah.
Harkening back to our winter episode that we had where we talked about snow and games. But yeah, it was, I felt it was good writing, very, very charming, you know. I like how Bowser didn't want Peach because he thought that she'd be destructive to his castle. And then there's a part later where she kind of wanders around and just, like, accidentally gets kidnapped, and you say that that's, like, part of her character, which I thought was funny. They kind of explain, like, that's why, you know, she's just prone to getting kidnapped. I think that's what one of the Toadsworth explains about it. This is also the first game to take place in the Bean Bean Kingdom, which was like their made up area that they go to a lot for the other ones. I think Dream Team takes place there also. Anything?
So does Partners in Time.
Oh yeah.
Does it?
Part of it does. I think Partners in Time takes place in. Isn't it take place in the past of Mushroom Kingdom also?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Is there anything else you want to say about Superstar Saga before we move on to Thousand Year Door?
I just remember it being really quirky. I'm trying to think of, speaking of intense moments from the last game, if I'm keeping a theme going, probably what you were saying, like that last boss where you get down to where if you fuck up, you have to start all over again. Like,
yeah.
You have no choice, no matter how much you've been healing yourself up.
Well, you can't, like, because...
You get to an instant death scenario right there.
Yeah, well, there's that part where you have to dodge everything, because you only have one hit point. And then you, like, have to heal yourself as much as you can after that. But if you're not quick, like, I've gotten past that and still died. Because if you're not quick enough with the healers, and you miss a lot of those... Because those moves that they do take off a lot of damage, and if you get hit by them, you can get killed still quickly, even if you got full life after that. So, yeah, it was a very, very, very intense last guy. And hopefully someday I'll come back and beat it, but, you know, it's rough.
Well, it looks great on the gamepad, so play it that way.
Yeah, no, I was waiting to get through Dream Team, and I'd like to play, I mean, I'd like to revisit all of these, you know, at some point. Like, I thought maybe, like, finish Dream Team, maybe do some Superstar Saga, hopefully get into Paper Mario 1 again after that. I really wish they'd re-release Super Paper Mario, because I really liked that game. That was probably one of my favorite ones, and I used to have it for Wii, but I ended up selling it, but I'd like to play through that one again. I'd like to play through that one again, just because it was, like, so much different. It was like more action oriented, but you still level up and whatnot. And it's got some really funny stuff in it.
It was more like a kind of almost Metroidvania game.
Yeah.
In a way.
Yeah. It was cool.
You have familiars. For sure.
So on to Paper Mario Thousand Year Door, which a lot of people are praising now as the like pinnacle of the Paper Mario games. Which I guess you could say that. I mean, it's pretty good.
It has, I think it basically was, you know, a direct sequel to Paper Mario. It didn't add a whole lot extra, but it did everything better.
It did. And it also added the ability to, like, you know, change your paper form into different things.
Everything that Paper Mario did and just improved upon it and then added some extra mechanics, but for the most part, it was, you know, that's why it's great, because Paper Mario was awesome. So yep. Super Paper Mario was even more awesome because it didn't diverge too much.
Yeah.
That's my opinion.
Yeah.
Thousand Year Door, right?
Yeah, because Super Paper Mario did diverge. But, yeah, no, what I liked about Thousand Year Door is that it felt like more of an RPG, I guess. Because I like Paper Mario, but it seemed like a little on the simple side, I guess, the first one did. And this one seemed a little bit more complex. Because your characters had, like, their own life bars now, and, you know, bigger. It seemed like there was more stuff and bigger levels, and it looked nicer. And it just seemed bigger than the other one, you know. And I liked it. I dug it a lot.
There's definitely more nice hub areas, you know, that led you to new places to explore.
Yeah, and this is a similar thing. Like this one released a month before the Nintendo DS did, so it wasn't like the end of the GameCube, but still, it's interesting that it's just this came out in October 11, 2004, and the DS came out.
Did we mention that Paper Mario came out the same year as the GameCube?
Yeah, we did.
Okay, we did.
Yeah.
Very late in the life cycle. Same with this one.
Super Mario RPG also, yeah. But this was a different, because it's the handheld came out right after it, but yeah, the DS did. There were a lot of characters. I'll just go through the characters again. They basically all kind of do the same thing as the other ones. You know, they just have different names. Goombella, she's the girl Goomba, does the info like Goombario did. Koops, same sort of thing with the shell and collecting things as the Cooper from the last one. Madame Flurry was the girl with the big boobs. The cloud boob girl that can blow off fake walls. And Baby Yoshi, which we both named Yoster, which was the only time you got to name a character in any of those games, which I thought was pretty rad. And you know, he does the same thing as like sort of like what the Lakitu guy did, where he carries them from one area to another. Vivian's like the ghost, where she makes you disappear. Admiral Bobbery is basically the same as the bomb girl from the first one. And then there's the mouse, which is finds hidden items and whatnot. Ms. Mouse. So it's like basically, yeah, you basically kind of get a lot of the same thing, but, you know, they seem a little more creative this time, because it's not just like a boo or just like a, you know, or just like a fish. They're like more, I feel like they have more personality this time around. And the main, Do you really like
it? Like the mouse, having a mouse as a character, because, I don't know, I really loved that boss in Super Mario Brothers 2, the mouse that you fight. I always thought that was one of the coolest, the old Mario bosses, so it was nice to...
The one with the bombs?
Yeah.
Well,
I have that mouse, like, as a party member in a game was something I remember being really happy about.
Yeah, get a nice little reference to Mario 2, in a way.
Yep.
This one had the director Ryota Kawadi. I'm sure I'm destroying all of these names, but I'm not that good at pronouncing Japanese names. You'd think I would, you know, with how much I like Japanese stuff. But it's the same director from the other ones. There's similar music. Yuka Tsukiyoko, it's the same guy. Bill Trennan on the localization as well. I liked in this one that the evil was different, like the X-Knots. It was based around the X-Knots instead of Bowser, because they were those Bowser interludes that they had where you played the 2D levels with him. You remember those, right?
Yeah, those are a lot of fun.
Which ended up being the inspiration for Super Paper Mario. Was while they're doing that, they're like, "Oh, we should make a whole game like this." So that's what went to that, which went into development after this, I'm sure. Actually, I think there's like a small reference to it in this game, saying that it's going to come out later. If you could find it, because I think they'd already started working on it like while they're doing this. But this is the other one that has 7 stars. Like, there's 7 star pieces. Or there's 7 stars that you collect in this one as well. So it's like kind of the same sort of thing as the last one, except they don't have personalities. One thing I forgot to mention was that the Paper Mario, the star personalities, I forget which Mario Party it was, but they made an appearance in one of the Mario Parties. I think it was maybe like 5 or 6, but one of the GameCube ones, they came back for that one. So they did a little reference to them. There's another part where Mario turns into 8-bit Mario. It's in the X-Knots fortress towards the end. So they've kept that in there. This is the one I mentioned before, like on the train where you read the ghost diary and it kills you flat out, you know, which I thought was funny. They also integrated the, you had the pipes that would send you into the backgrounds of the levels, which was cool. Like, that was new. Nobody really done that. And there were all those paper abilities also, where you could turn into a paper airplane, or you could, like, crumple up, like, into, like, a tube and, like, roll under stuff, or you could go flat and, like, go through, like, small spaces. It was cool that they'd started incorporating stuff like that into it. Or you could like, fold them into a boat also to, like, cross over, you know, water and whatnot.
Yeah, it added an extra element to the exploration, made it more of a puzzle, a sense of completion when you, like, learned a new ability and could move to the next area.
Yeah. Yeah, I really dug it. I really like Super Paper Mario 2. It's a different game. But yeah, both of those would be like on my top, I think, of all the Paper Mario stuff. It would either be Thousand Year Door or Super Paper Mario. Or they're both games I'd like to play through again. I remember reading like rumor stuff saying that like Thousand Year Door was gonna come out like an HD version for Wii U. There's like rumors for that like a year ago, which would have been awesome, but you know, nothing ever became of that, unfortunately.
Well, I hope it could still happen.
Yeah.
I'd be happy if it did.
It'd be cool. Yeah, totally. Alright, I think we're good on that one, right? Is there anything else you want to add before we move on?
I will just say that's my favorite of the flat Mario games.
Oh, sure. So, the paper stuff.
But I have not played through Super Paper Mario, so I don't have that. I don't have a full data set to compare, but yeah. So far, from what I've played, I like Thousand Year Door the best.
Sure. I mean, as far as, like, the RPG ones go, yeah, definitely. But Super Paper Mario is a different beast in itself. But I thought it was written really well, and it came out, it was, like, one of the first, like, releases for Wii that wasn't, like, a launch title, you know? So it was, like, it came out in, like, April of, like, that year after the Wii had just come out. So it was, like, for me, it was, like, the first big game, you know, that wasn't Zelda. So it was kind of a big deal. Like, it was, like, basically all, like, you know. Was what I had to play at that time, so I really dug it, you know, because I was still kind of new into the Wii and like liking it and all that. But speaking of new stuff, the first Mario and Luigi game on DS, the Partners in Time, you know, which is where you finally get to see the babies and the adults together, which is you get the inner child, as they call it. That was November 28, 2005. That was a year, right around the time of the Wii came out, like a year later. But
so I want to say something interesting when I was researching the release dates. This was the first one out of all the games that came out in North America before it came out anywhere else. So it actually was released, Partners in Time was released in Japan on December 29, 2005. So
yeah,
a month later. I'm not sure why it was that way.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, sometimes they do that, which is not very often, but it's cool. It's cool that they did. I would make a note that this is the only Mario and Luigi game that I've completed as Partners in Time.
Yeah, I completed this one.
I remember. I think it was my reasoning for beating it. What I told myself was that I was better at playing RPGs because I had been playing, like, there were a lot of them on GameCube at that time. So I'd been playing, like Bait and Kados and Tales of Symphonia and, like, a bunch of those games. And I felt that my skills were better, and that's how I made it through the end of it. Either that or the boss just wasn't as hard as the other one, which is probably the truth.
And Bait and Kados was a tough game, so...
Yeah.
I feel that game giving you confidence.
Yeah. It did, because I had been playing a lot of that, and I was like, oh, well, I can beat this one, because I'm better at playing this game that's harder, you know?
Also, in a way, it was kind of like respite from playing Bait and Kados, because that was kind of like hard work.
Yeah.
Playing that game.
Yeah.
Whereas you could actually have fun with this game. This game's really fun, and I haven't played through it since it originally came out on the DS. I believe I bought it right around launch.
Sure. Well, this one
is this one on the... Is this one on the Wii U?
Yeah, this one is on the Wii U.
Okay, I need to download it.
Partners in Time is on Virtual Console. So there's, like I said, there's three of them available of the games. that you can buy on Virtual Console. The Mario & Luigi Superstar Saga, Paper Mario, and Partners in Time are all on Virtual Console. So that's cool. I mean, 3 out of 9 is okay, I guess.
And four out of nine if you want to be technical, if you really want
to. Well, 5, I guess you could. Well, you could say 5. I guess you could say six, because like Paper Mario Sticker Star and Dream Team are still available digitally on the eShop, so you could buy those for the 3DS. And, you know, and yes, you can buy 64 in Wii mode still through that shop. But yeah.
I need to get this game. Just for research for this episode, I decided to look up a plot synopsis to see how much I remembered of the game. It's pretty convoluted what happens in that game.
I'd actually forgotten the plot in this one. That's probably why, because of how convoluted it was. I had to look it up, too, because I'm like, I don't even remember what happened in that game. I just remember I beat it.
I played all the way through, yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, basically,
it was great. The DS game that used both screens really well.
Yeah. Well, this was still kind of like towards the beginning of the DS. Well, the DS came out. Yeah, the DS had come out like the year before, so the DS had been out for like a year. And I remember finding it weird that there wasn't really much to do with the touchscreen except for like one part where you clean a map off. Do you remember that? There's like one part where you like use the touchscreen and you clean this part of this map, but that's like the only thing you do. But yeah, like most of it was all both screens, and you would control one thing to another, which was the only one who did that. The only one that did that, like. Well, I guess Bowser does it to a point, but not in the same way. Not like when it's, you know, where it passes from one screen to another and back to the bottom one.
Yeah, where, like, the babies are on the top screen doing their own thing.
Yeah, and you control them separately with, like, the Y and X as the babies, and A and B is Mario and Luigi. And, yeah, this one, I guess the main villains were the Shroobs and Elder Princess Shroob. I remember that. I remember a part with like her like on a microphone yelling to the other Shroobs. But yeah, all of it was the whole. Basically, they like go back in time, right? And the baby Peach gets stolen, or Peach goes missing, like in the like she gets lost in time somehow, and they have to go back and they find the babies and they get together. Yeah. So yeah, it's kind of ridiculous.
In the meantime, in Baby World, like someone else is going back in time and messed with Baby World, so. I think you go back and discover that.
Sure.
When you go back in time.
The Shihiro Fujioka, he was a designer on this, like one of the directors from the original Super Mario RPG. The director, main director is Hiroyu Kikubuta, or Kinku Bota, which he ended up, I think he directed the. He directed Bowser's Inside Story and Dream Team. So he became the director after that, like for the next one. And I guess he was a lead designer from Superstar Saga before this, so he had gotten some experience. But yeah, honestly, I don't remember a whole lot from this. Just like. Some weird stories and you know, time travel, and that it was easier than most of them is how I felt. So, I mean, I guess that one's probably one worth revisiting. Also, I don't remember if I still have the DS game or not. I might, but I don't know. But it's available digitally, so you can get it for $10.
Yeah, I think I'm gonna download it. I'd like to play it. I've played, I'd say 5 or 6 hours into. Superstar Saga on the Wii U. So yeah. I don't know if maybe I should finish playing through that and then hop into Partners in Time.
Yeah, I got the Superstar Saga because somehow I lost my Game Boy Advance cartridge of it. I don't know where it ended up being. But yeah. So I
actually recently acquired that game because I wanted a AGS 101 model SP. So I bought it off of eBay, and it came with that game, so it's kind of cool. I had the original game.
Sure. And well, I bought a copy for Jess, so I guess I technically have it again. But I bought the Game Boy Advance one. But then it was like on sale for a couple bucks, like I said, during the E3 time. So I just bought it just because I wanted it. Like, I think it was like $4. It's normally $8 or whatever. But moving on to the Wii release, Super Paper Mario, which came out April 9th, 2007, which was a couple months like after the Wii had been released, because it released like 2006. So, I mean, it meant a lot to me for that, because that was like the only game I had to play, I guess, at that time. I think that was the only thing that came out in that, you know, in that beginning life cycle of the Wii. So I got a lot of fun out of it. I thought it had a lot of really cool, like, had a lot of real creative, like, quips in it. There's a part that, I mean, there's somewhat spoilers, but it's not gonna, like, ruin the game or anything. There's a guy that you run into named Francis, who's, like, this, like, basically this nerd iguana guy, who flips out when he sees Peach, because he's, like, never, you know, he's nervous around girls and all that. But in order to, he's, like, in his room, and you have to basically answer all these trivia questions to get into his room. And one of the questions is true or false? I love going on message boards and complaining about games I've never played. True or false? Which I thought was hilarious, which was a nice jab at the internet that they put on there.
Wow. So you basically have to say that
it's true, like, to get in there, because that's what he does. But he when he meets Peach, like, he basically boots up this thing on his computer to like talk to her through a chat mode, because he can't actually like look at her. Which I think is pretty funny too, but yeah, it's got a lot of really funny stuff like that. And it's also considered to be like one of the darkest stories of the Paper Mario games, because it's basically about a guy who wants to like wipe everything out of existence. He basically wants to destroy everything that exists and make it to where nothing, you know, that there's a void and nothingness, which is pretty dark. And Luigi dies.
Painter guy.
The Count Bleck is his name. But, yeah, he's sort of, I mean, he's kind of, he looks like some sort of weird, like, Picasso cubism type thing or whatever. But,
Luigi
dies and goes to like hell of sorts in that game. Sorry, I'm spoiling it like crazy here, but it is a retrospective, and the game's like almost 10 years old, but you should still play it. Noah, he goes to basically like an afterlife of sorts called like underwear. It's called the underwear, you know, like underwear, like not like the underwear, but the WHERE. And it's also referred to as the negative world, which is cool, because it references that the secret level from Mario 1, the negative one. There's a lot of nerd shit in this one. Like, this is what I liked it, because they like, this is when they like kind of hit their stride of like, we're gonna like do all these references to all this crazy old Nintendo stuff that only the nerds will get, you know, like Francis and the negative one. But yeah, that's basically, it's supposed to be like the afterworld. Like, you talk to people, there's like one person who tells you that he got killed by a poisonous mushroom, like reference to like Mario 2. But that's supposedly where you go when the game over happens, is this underwear place, which is crazy. Like, I'd never seen, like, you know, basically Nintendo's version of hell or whatever was this place. So that kind of blew me away.
Wow.
When I was playing it. So I thought that was pretty dark. But yeah, no, it's totally, I 100% recommend it. I thought it was a very cool game. But in this one, you finally got to play as Luigi, Bowser, and Peach, and Mario, which is cool. Like, Bowser's playable character. And you know, it's basically, you have the ability to flip. It's like, it has a 2D perspective, but you can flip it to a 3D one, which I thought was really cool. So if you're on like a hill and a rock's coming at you, you can flip it to where the rock is, like where you can walk around the rock, which is interesting. You got all these pixel characters. I'm not going to read like what all they do. I just want to read their names, because they're like ridiculous. You can kind of tell like what they are. Like Tippy is like the info guy, like Goombario, and Thoro is like a guy that helps you throw. You know, like Thoreau. Whatever. So, like, the pixels are Tippy, Thoreau, Boomer, Slim, Thudley, Piccolo, Barry, Deshell, Dottie, Cudge, Fleep, and Carrie.
Fleep, huh?
Fleep, yeah. I think Fleep, like, helps you fly or flip or something. But, yeah, no, they all kind of do, like, they basically, like, give power-ups to Mario. You know, they're not actually, like, guys that play. They just... It's like, oh, you have this, so now you can do, now you, like Thudge is like, Or Thudley is you can do a butt stomp, and like Cudge is you can use a hammer, like stuff like that. He gives you things to do.
Oh, so they're not even like, I always kind of thought of them from seeing the game that they were like familiars, like following you around. But they're actually just giving you abilities, like
they just
represent like a selection of abilities floating above your head.
Yeah. Well, no, they're like these little pixel things that you see that you do talk to, but yeah, they give you stuff. Like Thoreau, like, gives you the ability to throw things, you know, to grab things and throw stuff. So, but they also follow you around and talk to you and all that. So, it was an interesting thing. This came out post, like, New Super Mario Brothers, right? Because there's like a giant mushroom mode in here also. You get a mega...
Oh, yeah, this came out in 2007 and...
Yeah.
That one came out in 2006, I think. Super Mario Brothers came out in 2006.
Well, this game was originally supposed to come out in 2006 as a GameCube game, but instead of doing like how they normally would release it at the end of the life cycle, I guess they just decided to port it over to the new system. So this would have been another thing where like it came out and then the Wii came out like months later. Because I remember seeing footage of it from IGN like as a GameCube game.
Is there any kind of like special Wii functionality? Don't you use the game thing to point at the screen?
Yeah, they added that where you point it at the screen and you can find like extra secrets, which was kind of, you know, that wasn't the most innovative thing, but
kinda
yeah.
They
kind of tacked that on, but yeah, it was fun. I mean, it is, you know, they took out the turn-based battles, but you can still level up and get higher hit points and whatnot. I read somewhere that I guess Seth Gordon, the guy who directed King of Kong, the Donkey Kong documentary, I guess he wanted to make a movie of this game at one point, but never got a response from Nintendo about it. So I thought that was kind of funny.
Wow, that would be very interesting.
Yeah.
Is it to like actually be like the game as a movie or about the game?
I think he wanted to. I think he wanted to make it like about the story in the game. Like he wanted to make
a documentary.
No, like a narrative, like a regular movie. Because he said that they're like, oh, well, you know, we can use 3D effects for it because it has 3D or whatever. Yeah, like he was trying to, you know, make it like an actual movie, but. Which would be interesting because it has such a weird, like I said, it has such a weird dark, you know, it has like a dark theme about, you know, destroying existence and all that. It has the same director as Thousand Year Door and Paper Mario. So, or I think it was just, or no, it was just Thousand Year Door. Same guy as Thousand Year Door.
And I remember reading a review about it back in the day. Probably on IGN, I don't know. And one thing they mentioned about it was that when you went to the three-dimensional mode, that, like, the world was super sparse. There wasn't a whole lot going on.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
It was more of, like, a tool to solve puzzles, but it wasn't really, like, you know, there wasn't a 3D world hidden within the game. It was just...
Yeah.
It just kind of was, like, the part that kind of screwed up the world that you were really in. So you could take advantage of the 3D aspects.
Pretty much. There's also like one little I remember like one cool Easter egg in it was you fight this dragon, I think his name's like Hooktail or something like that. And he like recognizes you as Mario and he like searches his memory banks to try to figure out who you are. And as he does that it shows the loading circle thing from the Wii eShop. Or from the Wii shop, which I thought was funny. Like, do you remember that like circle with the ball on it that used to spin like while it was loading the shop on the Wii system?
Yeah,
yeah. They do that, so he's like looking through the Virtual Console catalogs, which I thought was funny.
Man, do you remember the Everybody Votes channel?
Yeah, I remember the Everybody Votes channel. That ended up that they turned that into Splatoon. Pretty much, they turned it into Splatfest. Seems like. Because now that Splatoon has Splatfest, where you like vote for one thing or another, and then you fight over it.
Mustard on your hot dogs.
Yeah.
Isn't it kind of like that though? It's like, do you like your potatoes with gravy or with butter on them?
What, for Splatoon or Everybody Votes?
for Splatoon.
No, it's like hot dog. It's like hot dogs versus hamburgers, or like pizza versus whatever. And one was like Autobots versus Decepticons, or it's like cats versus dogs, like stuff like that. You know. I think I was only on the winning side of one. I think I was on Decepticons and they won. But you get like extra stuff for it. But yeah, that was basically what became of Everybody Votes. Good old Everybody Votes. I remember I used to send in questions for like real stuff. Like games, and then of course they never really added that. Instead of being like, you know, do you have dreams for the future, or whatever.
I do also remember the news channel was kind of fun because it showed the globe, and you'd spin the globe around. It would show like a top story from different parts of the world. You just click on the country.
Oh yeah, and it showed like the stacks of paper. Like if you backed up, it showed the globe. It would show like how many news stories for each one.
Yeah, they'd be like stacked up.
Yeah, it'd be like this big tower of papers. So I thought that was really cool. And I liked like the weather channel and whatnot that was on there. Good old Wii. I thought it was pretty cool when it came out before it got, you know, kind of swept under the rug by the HD stuff and whatnot. But
well, just by all that functionality being taken over by smartphones and stuff. Like,
yeah.
No one needs all that information on their television anymore.
I mean, they obviously, like, scared everybody because everybody, you know, pretty much tried to do motion control after that. So we got three left here. I haven't played through any of them, like all of the way, so we don't need to spend
neither
that.
Yeah.
We don't, huh?
I said neither have I.
Yeah. So we don't have to spend a whole lot of time on it. I just want to briefly mention them. Mario and Luigi Bowser's Inside Story, September 14th, 2009. That was the one that was, I think, was high, rated the highest out of them, aside from, like, Super Mario RPG. That's supposedly be the best one. I wish I could get it again on Virtual Console, because I don't have it right now, and I'd really like to play through it again. But basically, Bowser, Fawful returns in this one as the bad guy, and there's this thing called Blorbs that makes the Toads giant for some reason. But I remember Bowser, he basically eats this lucky mushroom that turns him into a vacuum and inhales, like, most of the world. So that's how they end up inside of him. But it's pretty cool because you can control Bowser with Mario and Luigi, like, on the bottom screen. And it's, like, a similar thing where X and Y are his, like, moves, like it with the babies. And this one takes place in the Mushroom Kingdom present. Same director as the last Mario and Luigi. Same music for all of them, pretty much, you know. I guess in the European, French, Italian versions of it is like Mario and Luigi Journey to the Center of the Earth, which I thought was funny. It's like a reference to that book. It has a different name instead of Inside Story. It's like Journey to the Center of Bowser. But yeah, that's one that I wish, that's one that I'd like to wish I could cover more. But I haven't really, I haven't played through it. But it looks, from what I played of it, I liked it. You know, there's a lot of that, like, I remember Bowser would, like, suck in enemies, and then you'd fight them inside of his body, and then, like, go to a different thing and move, whatever. So, pretty cool. The Nintendo released it on Virtual Console.
So I did some research. I haven't played the game, but I want to, especially after doing my research, because I looked at some reviews and stuff, too, I don't know why I never played this game. I really don't. I have no way to explain it other than there was a period of time for a couple years there where I didn't have a DS, so it was probably during that time. It looks awesome. It looks like it looks like a lot of fun, like controlling Bowser on the top, and he's completely unaware that Mario and Luigi have their own adventure going on, like while he's doing his own thing up the top.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, no, it's cool. From what I played of it, I dug it. So I'm still hoping for, like, I'm really, out of all of them, I'm hoping for that one the most on Virtual Console. So hopefully it'll show up.
I wouldn't doubt it.
And now moving on to my least favorite of all of them, Paper Mario Sticker Star for the 3DS, which was major departure from everything else, I guess. Apparently, I guess most of the team was newer to the games. Like, even, you know, apparently Miyamoto told them that they wanted to do it different just because a lot of these people hadn't really worked on the last one. The director, Naohiko Aoyami, I guess he worked on Paper Mario a little bit, the very first one, but that was about all he did. Basically, they come up with the idea of using stickers instead of, like, having, you know, instead of having partners and whatnot. And you basically don't have, there's no level up now. So my big problem with it was that the stickers made the battles completely pointless, because all that you get from doing a battle is losing stickers. So you have no reason to fight anybody ever in this game, you know, except for, like, a boss to get to the next part. Because, like, every time you fight him, you lose half your stickers, and then you gotta go get more stickers to fight other guys. So it was just, like, I feel like that in itself almost kind of killed the game for me, you know. But it looks nice. I mean, the graphics are cool. It's just, like, I just didn't, you know, I didn't really dig on this, on the sticker stuff. And you have, like, this sticker book that only can hold, like, so many stickers at once. So, and there's these big ones that are actually items from real life that you use, that you have to use to, like, solve puzzles. And most of the time you don't have them, so you have to, so you go and figure out what you got to put there, and then you got to go back and get them, and then go back to the whole level again, and then put it there. It just didn't work right for me. So.
So don't you actually capture real life things with some kind of item?
Yeah.
Turn them into stickers.
Yeah, you would pull stuff out and put them in your sticker book, but if you don't. If you didn't find it, or you didn't know you could pull it out or whatever, you have to... I found a lot of backtracking in it, I guess. And it doesn't... I didn't feel like it really explained to you very much about what to do in what part. I don't know, it seemed kind of confusing for the most part. And I didn't finish that one just because, like I said before, I didn't really like the way the battle system was, and I didn't like that you couldn't level up or anything. But I found something interesting about it. Apparently Nintendo decided to, like, not focus at all on the story in this one and make it, like, kind of more like a level-by-level game. Because apparently, do you remember those, like, surveys that you would do online for games and get points? Did you ever do those on the Nintendo?
I did.
They said that less than 1% said that the story of Super Paper Mario was a strong point of the game. So they decided to get rid of the story. Like, really? They actually listened to all that crap? I think most people are just clicking it to get through it. I don't know.
Yeah, you just wanted to get points for your Club Nintendo rewards.
Even though I did, like, towards the end there, for every virtual console game that I got, I would put a list of the ones that weren't available that I wanted to be available. In hopes.
Yeah, me too, man.
And it always, like, it was like Yoshi's Island, Star Fox, Earthbound. And eventually Earthbound got put out, so maybe it worked, I don't know. But I would just be like, release these, where are they not out yet, you know? So... I guess it's funny.
Like, please bring in 64 games. Please bring in 64 games. I don't think there had been any.
Oh, yeah, I did that too for Wii U when it wasn't on there. The interesting release date on Paper Mario Sticker Star, November 11th. It came out 7 days before the Wii U did in 2012. So the Wii U is almost, well, it'll be 4 years old in November. So it's like 3 years old.
It's a little over three.
Yeah. So, you know. I thought it was interesting that Koji Kondo actually did the music in this one. Because normally it was just inspired by him. He was actually the sound supervisor in this one. I found that interesting. But aside from that, it's kind of, I don't know. It was kind of a pass on me, I guess. I might try to finish it again at some point.
Do you think it's one of those games that one day people are going to be like, this game was ahead of its time, people just didn't understand it? Like, do you think it's that kind of game?
I don't know. Tedious? I don't know. I think it's kind of tedious. The sticker mechanic doesn't really work for me. Like, I don't think it works for the game. And it basically makes, like I said, it makes the battles not important. Like, there's no reason for you to fight any of the guys. You just spend most of the time just running away from them. So, I don't know. I mean, we'll see, but I don't think, I haven't heard anybody saying, like, Sticker Star is the best game, you know, anywhere. Like, even on, like, the forums or whatever, people still say it's pretty bad.
I know it's got mixed reviews. Like, some people scored it a lot higher than others. It's a very divisive game on the internet.
It scored higher than Dream Team, which I didn't agree with. You know, as a segue to Dream Team, the final game, since we made it through all of them. The ninth, right? Yeah, because 10th is Paper Jam. Right. So 9th, this one came on August 11th, 2013. It was part of the Year of Luigi, if you remember that, you know. It's the Year of Luigi. It was part of the releases with that and Dark Moon and whatever else. But it was cool that Luigi was, like, the main character of it. You know, a lot of it takes place within his dreams. And he's, like, he can fall asleep on command pretty much anywhere. So, you know, he's got that talent. And he sleeps on a lot of stone pillows in that game. So I don't know how. I don't know how he gets, how he can do that and get comfortable. But they introduced, like, these...
Jacob's Ladder in the Bible. When he's
a stone pillow. Yeah, maybe. They introduced these creatures called the Pillow, called the Pillow People. They're like spirits, pillow spirits. There's a part where you run into this, I should have Miiversed this, and I'm upset that I didn't. There's a part in the game where you run into this nerd pillow guy, basically. He, like, collects all this stuff from pillows, from the Pillow People. And right when you see him, he yells out, "Let's be pillow pals," which I was like, oh, I don't know, man. It's kind of a bit much for the game. I mean, he basically says, like, let's fuck. Like, right? What? Now. Yeah.
Sorry, we have pillow talk right now.
Yeah. He's like, I want to be pillow pals. I should have just Miiversed that and be like, I don't know, man. I don't know. I mean, I just met you. It's kind of weird.
Thanks.
But yeah, this had the same director as the other Mario and Luigi, same music person. Probably the last one that will have Iwata on there, unfortunately, as the executive producer. But yeah, there's like a.
It's definitely the last one that will have him as
the. Yeah, producer. Well, unless Paper Jam like was developing while he was still alive. I don't know. I don't know how long it took them to work on it. But yeah, there's some sort of Dream Bowser. Like I couldn't. So far, I haven't really. I mean, Peach is, you know, she disappeared somehow. The story seems pretty convoluted on this one too. But it's still...
It's kind of like Inception, but in the Mario universe.
Inception, sort of, I guess.
You go into Luigi's dreams.
I mean, we're not trying to get him to do anything, I guess. You just
tickle his mustache and get him to sneeze a little bit.
Yeah. You tickle his mustache to get him to sneeze, or his mustache turns into, like, a tree branch, and it'll grab Mario and, like, throw him to one side of the screen or whatever. It's got some interesting things in it. I mean, I enjoyed it for the most part, but it's not... I don't know. It's not my favorite. Hopefully Paper Jam will be better. But, yeah, we made...
For the tutorials.
Yeah, well, I mentioned the tutorials were... The tutorials were awful. And hopefully
they're... If you were like, no, I don't need you to explain it, it would still explain it to you.
Yeah. And it sucks when you're when you get stuck on bosses and you have to go through it over and over and over again. It's awful. And so there we have it. We gave you a retrospective of the Mario RPG stuff. Is there anything you'd like to add? I feel like we went a little long on this one, but you know, I'm sure when I edit it, it'll be shorter. But
I think that I decided to clarify. I did say that Thousand Year Door is my favorite Paper Mario game, but. I want to make it clear that my favorite is Super Mario RPG, the original on Super Nintendo.
Of course,
the game is. I could do a whole. We could do a whole episode about that. And I could just keep talking about it.
Sure.
Like that's,
yeah.
Without a doubt, my favorite. I think it was a breakthrough in the video game world, in my opinion.
What is your favorite Mario and Luigi game?
It's got to be Superstar Saga, just because. I mean, I played through Partners in Time, but I don't remember it, like I said, so...
Yeah.
You know, Superstar Saga, I do remember kind of that time in my life when I was playing through that, squinting to see it on the Game Boy Advance. I didn't have the SP yet.
Oh, yeah.
So it was like I had to play it outside in the sunlight, so I remember where I was. I was working at a camp at the time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it does.
So I just kind of, like, have, like, memories attached to it, and so it makes it kind of fonder for me. And I've been playing through it again on the Wii U.
Yeah.
And I'm a couple hours into it, as I said before, but I plan on going back to it. So, yeah, that's my favorite, without a doubt. It's got Fawful in it, and I know he comes back for
Inside Story. Sure.
So that's another thing that I didn't mention before, but that's another reason why I got to play that game.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Sure. Yeah. I guess I would have to say Superstar Saga, probably. Even though I really want it to be Bowser Inside Story, but I haven't, like, played that enough. I mean, I think that would eventually be my favorite whenever I play it. I don't know. Because what I did play of it, I remember really enjoying.
Well, maybe we could play that game and come back to it, like, for a future episode. Just do the Bowser Inside Story, like.
Sure, yeah. Sure. We can do that.
That'd be kind of fun.
Yeah. But as of right now, that was our retrospective. Hope we didn't bore you too much with it. I think we gave enough details on it. But yeah.
It's not necessarily too much, but that's the thing. Like, each game has enough going on in the story that
yeah,
it would have been a lot longer.
Sure. Yeah. Well, we didn't go through all of the plot points, just like the main, just like bare bones stories. But yeah, I don't know. Next week, maybe we'll have some more news of something. Or maybe one of us will get Paper Jam or something like that. We can talk about that. But I think that's that then. Thanks for joining us. We are your hosts, Trey Johnson and
Jeremy Bukowski.
All right, and we're signing out. Laters.
Later.